Fourth and final hour on this Wednesday afternoon. Darren McFarland, Steve Lehman, News Channel 5 alongside. You know, every day at 1 o'clock, you know what we're going to talk about. Just like we did earlier in the week on Monday when we caught up with Predators General Manager David Poile. We always enjoy our conversations with Jeff Merrick. He brings great insights and makes you think. Maybe that's why it's called 31 Thoughts, him and Elliot Freeman. And, of course, he does a lot of hosting on Sportsnet. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm at Rogers Arena right now. Draft, of course, in Vancouver. That's where I am. Flew in this morning. And in true to form, the minute your producer called me, they started testing the audio in the bowl. So I've stepped out into the hallway, which is a little bit quieter as this. They test everything out here on this this Wednesday afternoon in Vancouver.
That's,
how are you guys doing today?
That's the way it works, right? It's like when we do our show from the arena for every Predators home game, and they're always doing Anthem, and they're testing the sound for, you know, the power play. I mean, you know, it's like never fails. So
perfect timing. It's like I'm in a nice, like, secluded booth here. I'm here with one of my producers. Nice and chill, nice and quiet. The minute that my phone rings, bam, we start testing the audio.
All right,
Welcome
I need
my life, boys.
That's right. And you need to set me straight on this and tell me if this is wishful thinking or if I'm on to something. I kind of feel like with these latest moves, Trouba goes to the Rangers, and I get it, Winnipeg gets their first-round pick. Kevin Hayes just signed the big deal with Philadelphia. Like I said, am I in the wishful thinking category, or is there something to this? But I'm starting to feel like the Winnipeg window may be starting to close a bit. Where are you in on that?
Interesting. See, Winnipeg, they find themselves in this sort of awkward spot right now in that, you know, next year they're going to be a more expensive team, but they might not necessarily be a better team. Listen, I think that Morrissey and Trouba as a pair were probably, you know, with all due respect to Werenski and Jones in Columbus, the best shutdown pair in the NHL. I mean, Giordano and Brody, when they were together at times, had that, but I mean, and whoever's paired with Matias Ekholm as well. But that to me was the best shutdown pair in the entire NHL. Now they lose one half of that, and that's to make accommodations for new contracts, and new contracts for Patrick Laine, and new contracts for Kyle Connor, and those two will be sweet ones. But they're all established players. It's not like you're bringing in someone new. As a matter of fact, you just lost the center, as you mentioned, in Kevin Hayes. So Winnipeg's in an interesting spot, and they're in a very competitive, as you very well know, division in the NHL, which continues to get better as Chicago rises once again. St. Louis wins the Stanley Cup. Dallas isn't going anywhere, so it's a really competitive division. They haven't improved their team yet, but it's going to cost them more money. That's a tough spot for Winnipeg to be in, but any team that still has, you know, Mark Scheifele on it, and still has Dustin Bufflin on it, still has Josh Morrissey, so has Connor Hellebuck in net, so has Blake Wheeler, is always going to be a Stanley Cup contender. The question for Winnipeg now for me is Kevin Cheveldayoff done, or is he going to try to peddle 23-year-old winger Nikolai Ehlers to someone? That's one of the burning questions that's out there about the Winnipeg Jets these days.
One of the burning questions I was trying to throw David Poile's way earlier in the week was, is there going to be some big news coming out of Vancouver where you are? And, you know, this is sometimes that he did this. We all recollected on the day that on draft day, on that Friday evening when they traded for James Neal. And it was like, whoa, 5 years ago. And, you know, when Peter Laviolette came in the first year of him and Patrick Hornquist going to Pittsburgh. And so these deals have happened. Do you think the Predators could be one of those teams that is maybe active? I'm not saying – do you think they'll pull off maybe a trade? Do you think we'll see some of that in Vancouver that'll get everybody's attention?
The one thing we know about David Poile, and you guys know it better than I do because you're right there, is he's not shy about the big deal. Now, whether the big deal this year is a trade, and attention there would be on Cal Turris, who's coming off an outstanding World Hockey Championship with Team Canada where they made him captain and he was excellent the entire tournament, whether it's with one of the defensemen, or whether it's not a trade that we're looking at, but rather a signing. And one of the names that, you know, we've heard attached to Nashville come free agent season is Anders Lee. So you wonder if that could be a fit there. But I don't think that in any way, shape, or form, this is going to be an off season where David Poile tinkers with his team. I think David Poile, listen, we know David Poile likes big action. We know that he probably thinks that this team needs a little something, needs a boost. Need something different about it, and as I just mentioned, a really competitive division in the NHL, which continues to get better. So I don't think anyone would be surprised if David Poyle turns out to be one of those GMs that either makes the big trade or the big signing at all.
Jeff, I've said if Matt Duchene does not end up in Nashville this offseason, I'm never mentioning him again. I don't know how I can pull that off. That's virtually impossible, but that's kind of the way I feel because we've talked about it for so long.
If you move tourists, you might be able to do it. That seems to be, like, we've known for a long time, that's where Matt Duchene wants to end up. Like, it's not exactly a secret out there that, you know, that is the favorite destination if you're Matt Duchene. If you can do something with Kyle Turris, it wouldn't surprise me if Matt Duchene ends up a Nashville Predator.
So you do...
that to me seems to be the front running story as it relates to Matt Duchene. I mean, Montreal is very much in that mix. I mean, Montreal, listen, any center that's available, Montreal is in that mix. But I would put the front runner for Matt Duchene to be the Preds.
What do you think the market is out there for Turris? If you think that's the domino that has to fall in order to bring in Duchene,
what is
the market?
Great question. There's no doubt that, listen, we all know he's coming off a really soft season. This wasn't the best of all possible seasons for Kyle Turris with the Preds. But there was, you know, and I'm not the only one to notice this or to sort of look at this one and say there's probably more to it than what meets the eye. But there was something at Team Canada naming Kyle Turris captain this year at the World Championships that wasn't just about, well, we want Kyle Turris to be the captain. Because if you look at that Team Canada squad, I mean, there's more than a mittful of guys you could have made captain. Why was it Kyle Turris? Was it a favor to someone? Was it to try to, you know, get his confidence up heading to the offseason? Was it to try to get his confidence up, get a certain level of play out of him to heat him up for a trade sooner than later? I hate how it sounds like, you know, tinfoil conspiracy guy here, but there was something at play with making Kyle Turris captain more so than just what meets the eye. So I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there's some action there from David Poyle.
Well, how much, Jeff, do you make?
As far as what the market is, I don't think you can base it on last season, because that was just flat out an awful season for Kyle Turris. And anyone that's ever watched this guy play, whether it's Arizona, whether it's Ottawa, knows that that's not the real Kyle Turris.
Well, that's what I guess I'm getting at, Jeff, is what we saw in 2 or 3 weeks at the World Championships with Kyle Turris. How much does that factor in? Are GMs out there saying, see, there's the Kyle Turris we've seen for most of his career. Maybe Nashville just isn't a good fit, but that's the Kyle Turris I'm getting, or are they going to default back to, gosh, last year really wasn't very good. That's not the guy I want.
Yeah. You see, I wonder too, if it's an East-West thing, that maybe he's not built for Western Conference hockey. He's more of an Eastern Conference hockey player. And I look at a team that has cap space, and I look at a team that has a need for a second-line center. And, guys, I'm just doing this off the top of my head, but if I'm the Buffalo Sabres, am I not having to look at Kyle Turris to play behind Jack Eichel? I mean, a lot of people have, you know, one of those youngsters ticketed for that second-line center spot, but, you know, they don't know what they have in Casey Mittelstadt. They don't know what they have in Alex Nylander. They don't know what they have in Tage Thompson. And this is a team where expectations are rising, you know, consistently. And you brought in the new coach, and you brought in the new goaltending coach, the goalie whisperer, and Mike Bales. All of a sudden, you try to get some momentum going with the Buffalo Sabres. You got Rasmus Dahlin. You know what you have there. You know what you have in Jack Eichel. And if you win Stanley Cups down the middle, you see the Buffalo Sabres, and you have the cap space, and you have the spot, maybe you do have a look at doing something with Kyle Turris.
I'm not convinced, Jeff, that David Poyle is going to trade the obvious guy because, well, as we mentioned, the Patrick Hornquist deal, nobody thought Patrick Hornquist was going to move until he got moved for James Neal back in the day. But a year ago at this time, everybody on the outside seemingly was talking about PK Subban and would the Predators maybe trade him. And I think those of us who cover the team thought they're not making a move for PK Subban this summer. Now this summer, it seems like that may be more likely if they wanted to. What do you view PK Subban and Nashville's relationship like now, and how likely might it be that we see 76 move this summer?
Well, I'm with you. I think it's better than it was last season. And I think there'd be a number of teams that would be interested. Namely, you know, the team, you know, that's where I'm standing right now, the Vancouver Canucks. That would make a lot of sense, as Vancouver seems to be on just about everybody. And the first thing Jim Benning wants to do this offseason is redo his blue line. I think that the Nashville Predators are looking at their lineup right now and they're saying, look, we've got some young defensemen, most notably Dante Fabro on the horizon. And we still have Roman Josi, Matthias Ekholm, Ryan Ellis. Like, we've got a really good core of defensemen here. There's a big contract coming for Roman Josi, as you guys well know, and it will be well-deserved. You know, do we really have, you know, the luxury of having, you know, are we going to be able to afford the luxury of having $30 million worth of defensemen next season when the new Josi ticket kicks in? The answer to that is probably no. And so you look at, you know, someone like P.K. Subban, you say, well, what could we then fetch for P.K. Subban? And that is quite a haul. And it would be most notably from a team that's looking to redo their blue line. And I keep looking at Vancouver. I think Vancouver's there's a couple of teams that we're sort of told to keep our eyes on heading into the draft. I mean, we all know that Philadelphia is open for business, and you're seeing right now what Chuck Fletcher is doing there. Minnesota, Paul Fenton is open for business, and they're trying to redo that team completely. And so are the Vancouver Canucks, specifically with their blue line. So whichever blue liner becomes available, whether it's Jake Gardner, Tyler Myers, or if he's put to market P.K. Subban, you know, you can bet that Jim Benning and the Vancouver Canucks will be all over it.
We really enjoyed Wayne Simmonds' short time here, but it doesn't look like they're bringing him back. He's a great guy to deal with, as you know, but it doesn't look like, unfortunately, he's going to be sticking around. But, you know, it was a little bit of an eye-opener when he was here. It didn't work out for whatever reason, and he didn't have a great season. It looks like the game is speeding up. Well, it doesn't look like it. It is speeding up, and he's more slowing down. I'm certainly not pegging him as being the 38-year-old player, but what do you think that the market's going to command for a guy like Wayne Simmonds?
You know, that's a really interesting question. And I'll tell you what, Elliot Friedman made this point on the podcast a few weeks ago when talking about Patrick Maroon. And he made the distinction between players that get you there and players that get you through. And Patrick Maroon is not going to be a guy that has a great regular season. Much like you might say, listen, Wayne Simmonds is not going to have a great regular season. But when the playoffs start, those are the guys that get you through. Can you have a full team of those guys? No, not anymore. But to have one or two of those guys around that pay off big time at playoff time, you know, you wonder if what Pat Maroon was able to do with the St. Louis Blues, you know, gives someone like Wayne Simmonds a second look from various teams around the NHL. Sure, we're not going to get 82 games out of this guy. Sure, we're not going to get 82 productive games out of Wayne Simmonds. But when the playoffs start, this is going to be a guy that, you know, we rely on in a significant way. That's where a guy like that shines. Because the NHL is essentially, as you guys know, it's two very distinct seasons with two very distinct styles of play.
Jeff, last thing, I asked David Poile if he cringed when he saw the Erik Karlsson new deal with the Sharks. He said he cringes at every contract. I'm not surprised by that answer.
A lot of cringing this week at some of these dollar figures, I'll say that.
What do you think the Roman Josi number is going to be?
Oh, geez, and I'm a big Josi guy, too, because I've been saying all along that the number is 9. All along for Roman Josi, and then I saw the Erik Karlsson contract, and now I'm not so sure about 9. All I know is first chance I get, if I'm David Poile, I'm putting the number 9 under his nose to see if he bites. that Karlsson contract, I mean, essentially what the Karlsson contract is the updated Doughty deal. So I think that's probably what you're looking at for Roman Josi.
Good stuff as always, Jeff. We enjoyed the visit. Enjoy the draft, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Awesome. Always good talking to you guys.
Yeah, the same here. He is certainly good at what he does. Jeff Merrick, he is the host on Sportsnet, and he's part of 31 Thoughts with Elliot Friedman, as you just heard. Got loads of personality, and oh, by the way, they have really good context, and they throw a lot of stuff out there. Some of it's crazy. Some of it doesn't stick, but that's the nature of the business. But some of it does, and it gets your attention.
Yeah, and when you have context, all of it generally, I would assume, comes from some place of truth. It maybe doesn't get executed, or you don't see the trade that they speculate on or whatever, but it comes from somewhere. Somebody in the league that knows something, or somebody in the league that suspects something. It's just smart stuff.
All right, we'll come back. More of Darren Adonik on the other side, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Thank you, Laura. 2:15 is when Vanderbilt and Mississippi State first pitch in Omaha at the College World Series. Games 2 for both of them.
Hey, it was only 20 hours later than we were hoping.
Yeah. And we had a feeling that it was not going to happen in the window while we were on the air, and that is the case. So 2:15, the other game is in the books, and Louisville is still alive in the College World Series. Two teams out in the College World Series, and both in the SEC. Arkansas and now Auburn out.
Yep. Pretty good chance that.
I'm trying to think. What's the other elimination game?
Well, tonight is Texas Tech and Florida State.
Texas Tech and Florida State. That's right. So there'll be another elimination game tonight.
Pretty good chance one SEC team is going to be in the championship series, I think. But
yeah, it does look
that
way.
The other three are going to go home.
Yeah, that's right. I did want to remind everybody, speaking of, we told you you need to go out to Brewhouse South in Cool Springs for the draft party on Friday. We'll have live shows out there from 2 until 7 o'clock. Predators pick 24th. That's in the first round. But there was some interesting stuff that came out of that conversation with Jeff Merrick. There always is. So where do we want to start? Let's start with the Kyle Turris stuff.
That's what stood out the most to me.
We've had so many conversations, and we've talked to so many people about Kyle Turris, and I can't remember, and maybe I'm wrong, because my memory isn't great these days, but I feel like that was the first time I had heard anybody say, maybe he just is a guy that has a hard time, and he doesn't translate to the Western Conference. He's more of an Eastern Conference guy. And I was like,
Yeah.
Have you heard that before?
No, not really, but I have heard people talk about the differences between the conferences before, and that generally the Western Conference is a little bit more physical, a little harder to move, and the Eastern Conference has a little bit more free movement. That would stack up to what you see from Kyle Turris's game, wouldn't it? That seems like him.
Mm-hmm.
So I can maybe buy that. I haven't heard anybody apply that to Kyle Turris before, so I was with you. I kind of perked up when I heard that from Jeff Merrick, but it seems to make some sense. It just, what doesn't make sense to me is you look at the splits of Kyle Turris over his career. He was a very consistent guy in Ottawa. He was a guy that was a good playoff performer in Ottawa. He comes to Nashville and he's off the charts for a couple of months, but then has a terrible playoffs, comes back, has the worst regular season of his career, isn't any better in the playoffs. And then just after that ends and you're like, oh my gosh, what is wrong with this guy? He's named captain of Team Canada and he runs off to the World Championships and plays really, really well over there. I don't know what to say about any of that stuff. It doesn't make sense on the face of it. So maybe that's the best explanation.
So I asked him, do you think something's going to happen? It's not like David Poile's stranger to trading. And he's done it at the draft. We will see trades happen at the draft, which begins Friday night, first round. Do you think? What is your inclination today as we sit here and talk about it on this Wednesday afternoon? Do you think a move is made at the draft?
Yes. I think David Poile is going to be active this summer, and I can't imagine it's not going to start at the draft with the
where
capital.
Everybody
that
is.
Exactly. I think he's going to be active. There's no question about it. The question to me is, will the activity be the stuff we're talking about here? Is it Kyle Turris because it's what everybody's been talking about since probably the trade deadline back in February? Is it going to be PK Subban because of his massive contract and the interest level around the league and being able to clear some salary and what you might be able to get back? Or is it just going to be the deal that quote-unquote makes sense? As we talked about yesterday on the program, not saying this is going to happen, but does Craig Smith become a tradable piece because he's a consistent guy that you can get value back for within your team, and he makes enough money it helps you in the contract state? You know, because I'm with you. Like, you're not trading Freddie Gaudreau because that doesn't help you in the whole mix of trying to fit the pieces together and the contract stuff and the money issue that you have there. But there's several guys on the team that make enough money that maybe it's not the Subban $9 million, but make enough money that could help you there. And is there an interest in a Nick Bonino or a Callie Yarncroke or a Craig Smith out there? Guys that we're not even talking about as likely candidates here, but maybe come with the best dividends in a return.
I think the Callie Yarncroke deal is probably what's always going to keep him here because it's such a bargain, right? I mean, you're not really freeing up much, which is amazing. Remember, they got him 6 years, $2 million per.
That's amazing.
You know, I mean, is he a superstar? No. But today's game, most anybody and everybody who's active game in and game out makes $2 million a year, right? I mean, I get it. There's some guys, $1.5 million, whatever. But for the most part, and for the production level that you're getting from him and a young guy, still a young guy, two per, you're not freeing up much. That doesn't go very far these days. I mean, he's got a very, very friendly contract.
He does.
Which we tried to tell people, well, that's why they didn't protect James Neal. They knew they weren't going to re-sign him. And I know people didn't want to hear it at the time, but they knew they weren't going to sign him. And, oh, by the way, look at the deal. You think Calgary maybe has buyer's remorse today after a year? Remember, they have him for 4 more years. It was, 5 years, $25 million?
Mm-hmm.
Five per? And he had, I think, the worst career. Definitely. Because
worst
he had,
year
what,
of his
nine,
career,
I was gonna
he
say
didn't
he had,
play every night.
I was gonna say, he had, what, 9, 10 straight seasons of 20 or more goals?
Yeah.
And what, do you have 7? Last year's worst career by far. And that was in year one of that contract. And the reason is they had Cali Yarncroke for 6 years, $2 million.
Yep.
There was no reason. Why would you leave him out there to dangle to take that contract? And, oh, by the way, then basically what you're saying, we know we're just going to have him a year and we're just going for it. It was the smart play at the time. So, yeah, I don't know what I do not believe they're going to trade PK Subban. I do not. Do I have the same feelings and wherewithal to throw out the stuff that I did this time last year where I said, look, I'm just telling you, it's not happening. I'll shave my head if it does. It's a bet I've never made on the air because I do not ever want to shave my head. But that's how confident I was. I'm not willing to throw that out this year, but I still don't believe that he's going anywhere.
Generally, I agree, but I would have never thought they were going to trade Shea Weber until they did because of what he meant to the franchise. I agree. I think PK Subban means a lot, and not just on the ice, for the Nashville Predators. So I don't think that's what they want to do. But at the end of the day, this is about winning. And if David Poile can free up some much-needed cap space and get a decent return. Now, Jeff Merrick brought up the Vancouver Canucks there.
He did.
I don't know what you get back in a deal other than unloading the contract. I don't know what you get back from the Canucks where you think automatically I feel better about
right.
the team.
They have the 10th pick in the first round, so that.
But you need a lot more than just that.
Oh, no question.
So that's the problem there is to make a deal, you're not just making a deal. You need to come back in a deal like the Weber thing. From a Nashville perspective, when they traded Shea Weber, which seemed unthinkable at the time, you immediately saw the logic because it was like, well, PK Subban's younger and probably better at this point of his career, so that's a great deal. That's what I think the deal has to be for David Poile to do this. And I don't know what it would take to pull that off, but that's the type of thing.
I'm thinking Besser, Horvat, Pettersson in the 10th pick. What do you think?
Yeah, if you could do that, okay.
Of course, in Vancouver, they would probably riot if that trade happened. It would be probably giving up a little too much,
yeah.
Or maybe a lot.
So do you think something gets done at the draft this weekend by Mr. Poile?
You know, I have dodged a lot of your questions the last 2 days because I honestly I'm not dodging them. I don't know. I can't get a true read. A lot of times I can get good reads, I feel like, on – things that will or will not happen. And a lot of times they have hit and been 100% correct. I can't get a read. I don't know. I really don't know. I think that he wants to, but I know that David Poile is sensitive, thinks things through. Sensitive is not the right word. He's sensitive to the future and doing things the right way. He is not a gunslinger. He's not somebody that's just going to do something to do something. It has to make sense. Maybe that's the word I was looking for. It has to make sense. He is going to think things through,
yeah.
And it has to make complete sense. He's just not going to do something to do something, which is the right approach. So somebody's going to have to wow him. in their talks. Can that happen? Sure. But I don't know. It takes two to tango, and I have no idea if they can get something that he feels like is suffice to pull the trigger on a deal that probably has, like most of his deals, everybody going, wow, did you see what the Predators did? I don't know. It's the perfect place. Said they're all going to be right there together. They're all hanging out now. They're all around each other. They're probably having conversations right now about it. Hey, what do you think about so-and-so on your team? Or, hey, what do you think about so-and-so on our team? You know, those conversations happen. And sometimes it's a flippant comment that sometimes leads to a trade. I know I've had those conversations with David Poile. I've talked to other people before where that just sometimes just a flippant statement, and then it gets the ball rolling. My gut tells me as much as that he would like to, I don't believe he'll get anything done. I don't believe a trade will be attractive enough for him to pull the trigger. So, no.
But you're talking just this weekend at the draft. Right?
Just this weekend, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you asked if something happens in Vancouver.
Sure, no, that was my question. I think we're all in agreement that he's going to try to be active this summer to change this roster significantly next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so even if he doesn't get a trade done this weekend, he's going to look to do something once free agency begins.
We'll come back on this Wednesday afternoon. More of Darren Adonik next. We've told you when Vanderbilt and Mississippi State will have their first pitch, and it's in about 45 minutes or so, 40 minutes. So let's talk about it. We haven't really talked much about Vanderbilt. We thought we were going to talk more Vanderbilt today because they were scheduled to play a game last night, and so we would have obviously talked about what happened in that game against Mississippi State. So they're pushed back another day. Kumar Rocker was supposed to have his follow-up game, and we were very curious, what's the follow-up game look like? It's not going to look like the game against Duke because that would be virtually impossible because that's probably a game he'll never have the rest of his career. I mean, that it was that impactful. But what does it look like? Remember, he's a freshman, and he's had a lot of people talking about him since that performance. What does it look like? We're about to find out in about 40 minutes. What does it look like? What's your gut feeling? What do you think it looks like?
I don't know, to use your line from the last segment.
Today's theme, we don't know.
Here's what I'll say. I think he'll be ready to go. I think his stuff will be electric. I think he's going to be difficult to hit. He has been all year. The question I have, though, is if you're sitting there, if you're Chris Lemonis, if you're Mississippi State, and you're doing the scouting report on him, isn't your scouting report that you have to leave that slider alone? You just have to lay off of it. Make him beat you with the fastball. That's what Duke was unable to do. They literally could not put the bat on the ball on that pitch.
19 times.
And I don't think many of them were strikes. They just swung over the top of them and got themselves out. Now, laying off of it when it looks that good and that much like his fastball and then it drops off the table is easier said than done. But I think if you're Mississippi State, your game plan is make him throw that pitch for a strike and sit on the fastball. Try to gear up for 96-97, and when it's there, take your cuts at it. And make him throw that slider, curveball, whatever, for a strike. And I'm not sure he can. So that's the ultimate question, I think, for me. Or at least I'm not sure it can be as devastating if he's throwing it for a strike. So that to me is the question, is how disciplined can Mississippi State be? And if they are, can Rocker show sort of his own level of patience to pitch around the pattern he did so well in that game?
The other thing for me is we had a really good conversation with J.J. Blade on Monday from Omaha, and we know what kind of season he had. He led the country in home runs. While everybody can hit on this team, as we know, they were top five in the country in basically every offensive category, but he's kind of the driving force behind it. But he really hasn't been in postseason play,
right,
when it comes to the regionals, super regionals, and now through one game in the College World Series. The question I have is, do you think at any point he is going to take over a game and win Vanderbilt a game because of his bat?
Sure would be nice. Vanderbilt doesn't need it because of how balanced they are on the offense, but you got to think, a guy that's hit 350-plus all season long and leads the country in home runs, one of these games he's just going to get going and it's going to open up the floodgates for him for the rest of the time. Maybe that's the day today. I mean, Austin Martin's done such a good job. Does that mean J.J. Bleday starts to see a few more pitches because maybe people pitch around Martin and then he gets on base, so you got to be more careful with what you do? I don't know. But Vanderbilt's offense needs to get going because they weren't very good, frankly, against Louisville on Sunday as they kind of got their feet on the ground in Omaha. You're going to face some really good pitching the rest of this bracket at least, and probably the championship series as well, the way Michigan is going. But Mississippi State and Louisville arguably have the two best staffs in the country. So Vanderbilt's going to have to win at least two more games out of this, and you got to believe they're not going to just be able to do it 2-1 and 1-0 and things like that, riding their arms. At some point, this offense that has been so good all year long has got to get going, and the number one guy you look for to do that is Bleday.
And on the flip side, the opponent, Mississippi State, how do they respond? Very emotional win. Come from behind. We've talked about it all week. If you didn't see it Sunday night, I'm sure most of you have now. Just a complete collapse in the ninth by the Auburn Tigers. It's unfortunate. The third baseman had a three-run bomb home run. He was set to be the guy everybody was talking about. Auburn's upset victory over Mississippi State in the first game of the College World Series because Mississippi State was pretty much the heavy favorite over Auburn. But instead, he had two critical bad throwing. Well, he had the bad throwing error, and then he had the next. I don't know, it wasn't a throwing error. He just couldn't get. It's almost like he was just thinking about it. He couldn't get rid of the ball. He throws it to first. Runner safe. They keep the inning alive yet again. And then at that point, it's bases loaded. And then there's a chopper up the middle, goes off the pitcher's glove and into the outfield, and game over. So Mississippi State scores, what, four in the ninth?
Four in the ninth.
To win. So that's great. So you're thinking, okay, well, usually that serves as momentum. Okay, but they didn't play last night, so there's an extra day. All that's worn off.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you respond well to a big-time high. Sometimes you come out a little bit flat because maybe you did all that celebrating and you're still thinking about that great come-from-behind victory. That's what I want to see. What Mississippi State team? I will say this, though. They weren't a stranger to coming back all year. So
no.
They have that in their DNA. Vanderbilt knows that. They better be careful with a lead late because Mississippi State will fight you to the end.
Whatever the score is late, the game against Mississippi State is not over until you get the 27th out. And Vanderbilt knows that as well as anybody because of the super regional here last year when Mississippi State walked off against them once and then had a big rally in the 11th inning of the decisive Game 3 that sent the Bulldogs to the College World Series a year ago. Mississippi State feels like they have unfinished business in Omaha. Vanderbilt feels like it's the best team, I think. And honestly, to me, Darren, these are the best two teams. There's a lot because of the circumstances around it and the rain out yesterday and already the day off built into the schedule. Now this just kind of feels like one game to me. It doesn't really feel like part of a bracket in Omaha. It just feels like they're playing one game. It's a massively important game. But I don't know if anything that happened on Sunday matters. It's two teams that know each other. They played each other in a super regional, an intense and emotional super regional series a year ago. They played each other in Hoover a month ago in what was maybe the best pitch game in college baseball all season long by two teams. But Tim Corbin said this a few times. We know all these teams in our bracket because we've played them all, but we never played them before in Omaha. And Omaha changes things for people. And I think we've seen that throughout this tournament where pitchers have failed to throw strikes when they normally do, or guys have risen to the occasion that you don't normally expect. To me, that's the million-dollar question for a half an hour from now. I think you know generally what you're getting from Mississippi State and Vanderbilt and Mississippi State versus Vanderbilt. But this is the first time we've ever seen that matchup in Omaha. So what does this look like?
About 30 minutes away from first pitch of that game, Vanderbilt-Mississippi State at the College World Series. Auburn's season has come to an end. They lose to Louisville 5-3. Another team will have their season come to an end tonight in the nightcap as Florida State and Texas Tech will do battle. Will this be the end for Mike Martin. 4 decades as their coach. What is this, the 17th appearance, 18th appearance?
17th.
In the College World Series. I'm predicting Florida State wins tonight, and they keep it alive.
They got to do it for the mojo, right?
Texas Tech is out. That's my prediction. That's my bold well, I don't know how bold it is, but that's what I think how it's going to play out tonight.
I like it.
Florida State stays alive. Texas Tech goes home.
I like it.
We'll go home after the next segment. We'll call it a day. You're listening to Darren and Donick on 102.5 The Game.
Off the ground or get you established or whatever.
Well, just make sure they have that money.
Yeah.
And it's not fake money.
Right.
We've seen that too.
Do the due diligence behind that. But, yeah, I think your point's exactly right. As a fan of a team, as a citizen of a city or of a market, you feel much better when your ownership's tied. I mean, we talked about this a little bit yesterday. How much better do you feel about the Titans' ownership now because Amy Adams Strunk has the visibility she has in Nashville? Don't you feel a ton better?
It's done a 180 in the last 4 years.
And that's the same family. The same family that everybody was concerned that Bud never lived here and all those sort of things and how tied they were to the community. Amy Adams Strunk, by having a home here, by living here, by having an office that she's always in at St. Thomas Sports Park, it just feels completely different. And maybe somebody like a Jason LaCanfora will start the rumor about selling the Titans again or something. But that's not happening.
Yeah.
They want this team and they want it in Nashville. And I'm not sure you could have said that as definitively 4 or 5 years ago.
Steve, thanks for coming in the last couple of days. It's been fun.
You bet. You have yourself a great trip.
I plan on doing that, and we'll talk soon. For Steve Lehman, I'm Darren McFarland. Marquise, sorry, bud, you'll be here tomorrow. We will not. Everybody out there listening, you have a great rest of your day. Stay tuned. More coming. Jared and the GM, that's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.